Okay, world, Chodesh Tov, Chanukah Sameach. And we're holding today on Daf Samech Aleph, except that I foolishly couldn't control myself last night. It went a little bit too far, even though I said I wouldn't do that anymore so we could maintain the structure of the Dapim. Gosh, I don't know what we're going to do here. Maybe we should just start again from Yibayelu, just to go over it again, so at least we'll have the Daf Shalom. Yeah, I think that's not a bad idea. Okay, so what do you say that we start on line 5, on Daf Samach Aleph, on this wonderful Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah, unbelievable, fantastic schus. We have a rezoch at the Shmu, getting a beautiful haircut, and beard cut, and it's like, his chachas, unbelievable. Okay, so today's daf is Daf Samach Aleph, and we're holding on line 5, which is the question of what do we do? What if you say Yain Sha'anito Im Yovel? So now does Yovel, and as we said, it doesn't mean Yovel in the same sense as Yom, because we've already decided that issue. It means Yovel Zeh. So, my, is the Yovel year itself, part of the 50-year period that began on 7 Shemitah before this, or does it begin the next group of Yovel? My, Shnata Chamishim, Kelifnei Chamishim or Kala'acha Chamishim? Well, this is a very famous machloket as to where we do, what do we do. The machloket is actually in the other direction, but that explains the answer, because the question is whether the 50th year is also the first year of the eighth cycle, so to speak. In other words, there were 7 Shemitahs, then you had the Yovel. Does that Yovel count as a year outside of the entire structure of 7 times 7, or is it the first of the next group of 7 years? So that's the question. How do we look at the Yovel? And it turns out that that is a very important machlokas, the Tanya Pluta, the Rebbe of Rabbanan. How do we understand the Pasuk? The Pasuk says, V'kidashtem et shnat ha-chamishim shana. So what is it stressing? I mean, we know that it's the chamishim shana, was sheva pamim sheva. What it's telling me is specifically shnat chamishim shana. That means count the shnat chamishim as that shana, but do not count that chamishim as also the shnat chamishim and the shana achat of the next shmita. So iyatamonet shnat chamishim plus the achat. That's the way the Ran understands it here. Okay, there's obviously, otherwise you can learn it. It doesn't count as the 51st year. That is to say that we should view it as a continuing process into the next group. Anyway, bikan amru, this is the source of the halacha that Yovel eino ola lamina shavua. We do not count the Yovel within the structure of the years of 7 times 7. Reb Yudah Amar, on the contrary, Yovel ola l'minyan shavua. It is really the first year of the next one. Okay, so then that is exactly the question that we were talking about over here. It's according to Rabbanan. So we view the Yovel only as the complete, meaning the Shabbos of the Shviyas. So it's the equivalent of Shabbos to a week in the super week, the Meda week. And therefore it's included in the Yisra of the Neder, because it goes l'shava. Since it starts the next Yovel, and it's part of the eighth Shemitah, so it would not be included. There's your answer. Fine, but meanwhile, back to the Machlokas. So the Chachomim said to Rabbi Yehuda, how can you say that? Because part of the Shemitah is not merely not doing the Melechas HaKarka during Shemitah, it's also Shei Shanim Tizra Sadecha. That's the same that we have by Shabbos, right? Sheishas yomim taseh melachtecha. Sheishanim tizra sadecha. So according to the way you're understanding it, the first year of this Shemitah cycle that started off the next Yovel does not have 6 years available. It's only got 5 years available, because the first year is Yovel, and it's also with the same dinim as Shemitah. So how are you going to be mekayim the pasuk? Ein kan ela chamish. Says Rabbi Yehuda, and according to the way you're understanding it, so all of the 7 cycles have to be exactly the same? This can't be referring to the other cycles. How do you understand the fact that when Yisrael asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what are we going to eat? We have nothing to eat. And he answers them, Tziviti et birchati lachem bashana hashishit v'yasat et hatvua l'shlosh hashanim. Wait a minute. Shlosh hashanim doesn't help very much if there's a yovel. Shlosh hashanim is for the sixth year, which it always would produce for. The entire seventh year, which is an extra year. And now you're not going to have anything to eat in the year after, in the eighth year, because it's going to take time for you to plant and for things to grow. So the sixth year has to provide for all three of those years. Ah, but what if it's Yovel? You have the same problem I have. So what's HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying? Don't worry, you'll only starve to death in the fourth year. I mean, that's ridiculous. So obviously, what do you explain the pasuk means? If it says, what do we do when Yovel comes and it's Arba Shanim? You're going to have to explain it as referring to the norm. The norm is that in six out of seven such events, you only need enough tefillah for 3 years. It's true. Once every seven, you need enough for 4 years. But the Torah is talking about the norm. So what's your problem with me? Your problem is that you're claiming, well, you're not going to have sheishanim tizrat sadecha. Yes, I will. Most of the time I will. The only time I won't is at the beginning of the next Shemitah, which is the eighth, so to speak, the first of the cycle. And there, so I say, fine. So the Torah wasn't talking about that. It was talking about any of the others. So what's a big deal? So that is your answer. Now, the next thing we had in the Mishnah is Ad HaPesach. So now we have this Machlokas. So Rabbi Meir says Ad HaPesach means it's over the minute Pesach comes. Where Rabbi Yossi says, no, Ad HaPesach could mean the idea of until Pesach is over, as if it would have been Ad Sheheya Pesach. So now, I mean, the question is, apparently, this is an assumption, but the assumption is, and in our Masechet, we stick with this assumption, even though in Kiddushin we have another way of explaining it, which I'll be talking about in a minute, but our assumption is that the Machlokas is dependent on how we understand people's willingness to use language ambiguously. So this was a question that we had earlier on. Will people allow themselves to be caught by ambiguous language, and they won't have a clear-cut sense in their minds, okay, what I mean is this, and they're willing to allow their language to be understood ambiguously and therefore bind them with the suffix of, as we said, Nedarim Gol L'Chumra, or whenever the language is ambiguous, then it means that the person using that language expected it to be interpreted in a way that would cancel all ambiguity, in a way which it's absolutely clear. So if I'm going to say Ad Lifnei Pesach, Ad Pesach, it could mean at any point. I mean, so what do I mean? Do I mean like before the 230th minute of Pesach? Do I mean before the 14th hour of Pesach? I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean before Pesach. What, I'm going to start here and allow you to start telling me maybe you meant this, maybe you meant that. So what's absolutely clear is that Pesach is Pesach is Pesach. And you could send the roses when you want. So this means that Ad Lifnei Pesach, that's the time. Masha Inkein Rabbi Yossi is saying, well, you know, you never know. I mean, a person, language is language, and there's cases where it's ambiguous, and that binds you for the neder. Now, this was an important issue that we had before in terms of the Nedarim overall. It's a very profound issue about neder. If neder is a construction of a reality, which is a virtual reality, that the Torah is giving you the ability to create Isurim, so then, would it even tolerate ambiguity? So it's all a function of the language, and whatever language is, that's what it does? Or is it only where there's a clear-cut description of that reality? Okay, so this seems to be the machlokas. Over here, the problem is that we know that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi hold exactly the opposite about ambiguity. Take a look at this. You're trying to tell me Lamema the Rebbe Meir Sover Loma Ayalinish Navshe Lisveika. That Rebbe Meir is saying a person is not going out to allow himself to get caught up in a situation where he is unable to define clearly what's meant. Therefore, he is using language in a way that is meant to be taken unambiguously. Yes, you're right, it could mean that, it could mean that, but it definitely means this. Okay, so if that's the case, Rebbe Meir is saying, Ein Adam Machris Atzvo, Lo Ma'alinish Nafshe L'Sveika, and Rebbe Yossi holds Ma'alinish Nafshe L'Sveika. There's only one little problem, and that's the fact that in Kedushin, we find that they hold exactly the opposite. Imagine a case where a guy was married twice. From each of his marriages, he had two daughters. Now, they're all Ketanot or Naharot, and he wants to accept Kedushin. Okay, so we had this problem in Tanakh, you know. Somebody came along and say, I want Bitcha HaKtana. Well, father-in-law was definitely Ma'ayale L'Sveika. Whoa, Bitcha HaKtana? Well, you know, as Rashi says, you know, I'm not sure which one of the Ktana, the first one or the second one. Anyway, so this guy's got the same problem. You're trying to marry Bito Agdola or Bito Aktana. Well, what does he mean? So the prospective chassan comes along and he says, I would like to marry your oldest daughter. Okay, so the father says, okay, I'm marrying you. Biti Agdola Mekabel your Kedushin. The problem is that Bito Agdola could mean the oldest of the older group, but it could also mean the oldest of the younger group. As a matter of fact, it could even mean the younger of the oldest group who is older than the oldest of the youngest group. Aha! So that is definitely a bit ambiguous. How about working another 7 years for me? Anyway, so the question is, what do you do under those circumstances? Now here, if you're going to say Ma'alinish L'Sveika, boy, are you in trouble. Because you can't marry any of these women. Never. Why? Because there's going to be Achot Ishtecha. Everyone is going to be a Suffolk and Achot Ishtos. So even if he gives them all Gittin, he's not going to be able to marry them. So this is a very serious problem this guy's got over here, right? So therefore, if he's got Shteki Te Banot B'Shtei Nashi, V'yamar Ki Dashti Et Biti Agdola, but or maybe it is even the Ktana Shebegdolot, who is after all Gdola min Agdola Shebegtanot, all of them are usher. They're usher to everybody, and they're even usher to this guy, and to everybody, at least he could give them all Gittin, and they would be Mutores, but to him, they're going to be usher forever, because they're all Svekas. So they're going to be answer to everyone in the world except for the Ktana Shebiktanot, Divrei Rebbe Meir. Uh-oh. So here Rebbe Meir is saying that a person is machlis himself to a suffix, which is the exact opposite of what he seems to be saying over here, that Ein Adam Ayalinish L'Sveika, and that's why it's only till Erev Pesach. Ay, 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 it's Rebbe Yossi, in this case, who says the opposite, which is the opposite of what he said in the Mishnah. Here, Rebbe Yossi Amar Kulan Mutarot. On the contrary, a person's not going to be machlis atzmo l'safek. Chutz min Agdola Shebegdolot, the only one that is unambiguously the oldest daughter is the oldest of them all. So she has to be the Gedola Shebegdolot. So this is terrible. Because here, Rebbe Yossi is the one that holds that the Ein Adam Machlis Inish L'Sveika Machlis Atzma L'Sofek, right? Which one is right? Omer Rebbe Chanino Bar Avedimi. Now, I have to tell you at this point, the Gemara in Kedushin asks on the Mishnah there that we just quoted about the two sets of daughters, asks this Kasha, and says that the Mishnah in the Dorim was not about the element of ambiguity at all. Had nothing to do with it. It was a question of the meaning of terms in the way that people generally will use it. And so therefore, the difference was whether people use the term of the Pesach, the Mifnei Pesach, the Pesach is over, or whether it means before. That's all. It's nothing to do with ambiguity. And therefore, the Gemara over there dismisses the question. Now, the Gemara over here does not take that approach. And instead it says, we basically are going to have to flip the shitas in our Mishnah. So apparently, now this makes a big nafkamina. I'll tell you what the nafkamina is. The nafkamina is that the halacha goes according to Rabbi Yossi, where there's a machlokas Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir, you see. So in the Gemara in Nedarim keeps the language of our Mishnah as it is, according to which Rabbi Yossi is the one who is saying that Anam is machlis atzbay l'safek, and that would mean that we would paskin that way. Mashenka in the Gemara in Nedarim is coming out to say that no, we've switched it around, and Mukhalefes Hashita, and indeed, we bring a riot to the fact that it's Mukhalefes Hashita from the following Braisa, Vatanya. Sure enough, it says, Beferish in the Braisa, Zeh HaKlal. Kosh is Mano Kavua. If you have something where we know precisely, in advance, we know exactly how long this issue is going to last. Pesach? I know how long Pesach is. And since I know, I don't want to say, because there may be some people who are living in a weird place where Pesach is 8 days or something like Hanukkah, but for normal people, so I know exactly how long Pesach is. This is, if any other machlis atzmal asufik, what happened to Sveika the Yuma? Okay. So the question over here is, I know exactly how long Pesach is, and therefore, if it's something that has a set duration, that is to say, not a set of chalots, and he said, ad lifnei, Rabbi Meir says that means until the end. And Rabbi Yossi says, ad shiyagia. Oh, here you go. So according to this, Rabbi Yossi is saying what our Mishnah said that Rabbi Meir said. And that in fact, Rabbi Yossi is saying, ein inishmael nafshe l'sveka. So now, if that's the case, what would be the psak halacha? Because according to the Gemara in Kedushin, the Mishnah is exactly the way we have it. It's correct. According to Gemara in the Nedarim, this Mishnah is inverted. So should we paskin like Rabbi Yossi of the inversion? Or should we paskin like Rabbi Yossi that doesn't need to be inverted, which would mean it would go according to Rabbi Yossi as it appears here? So what's interesting is that it's a machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramban. So the Rambam holds that, look, in the Dinim of Nedarim, Mesechet Nedarim is where to look for a Psak Halacha, not Mesechet Kedushin. So the fact that in Mesechet Kedushin they figured out how to not worry about Mesechet Nedarim is not a good reason to follow the Mesechet Kedushin. Not to mention the fact that there's a Braita that supports the inversion of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi over here. So therefore, we're going to paskin about like the Rabbi Yossi in the way that the Braita inverts it, and not the way that our Mishnah has it. That's the way the Rambam learns. The Ramban, it takes the sugya over there to be ma'adif, not to have to flip the sugyas, and therefore he takes it until, as Rabbi Yossi says, Achi Yetzeh, that a person is machlis atzmal asafik. And he paskins like Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah. Now, it's a fascinating Yerushalmi that the Ran brings. We say that we know how long it's going to be, right? So how about if a guy says that I'm not going to drink wine until my kid's wedding? So now, is a kid's wedding kavua? Or might you cancel the original date because of COVID and reschedule the wedding, and therefore it's not considered to be kavua? So this is the shaila that the Yerushalmi brings. It's fascinating. And it does not give an answer. So we have to be machmer on that issue. Anyway, it's very sweet. So a contemporary question that one can easily see the problems. Okay, we're ready now for our kapitan. And here he goes. I see you didn't drink your goggle muggle this morning.
Rebbe didn't drink while he was not guggling either.
I didn't have anybody. I didn't have anybody sharing with me until now. There we go. Okay, now we're going to be talking about now an issue of something that actually does not have a set time. So until now we talked about, okay, anything that has a set time. So we're talking about Pesach, worrying about weddings, but what about something which never has a set amount of time? So the guy says, Ad HaKatzir. So until, remember that in Lashon HaKodesh, we have different words for what in English goes always by the same, the harvest, right? So for the wine, we call it one thing. For olives, we call it another thing. For grains, we call it another thing. So Ad HaKatzir, Katzir refers to Tvua. Ad HaBatzir refers to the Anovi, the grapes. Ad HaMasik refers to olives. So in all of these cases, your usher only, according to everybody, only until the onset, because you have no way of really knowing in advance how long it's going to be going on for. See, even though we talked about before whether Maya Inish Lisfeka, that has to do with language ambiguity, but not to the practicalities of ambiguity. Over there, a person knows him. Well, I don't know. So therefore, he for sure, according to both shitas, whatever Rabbi Yossi holds or whatever Rabbi Meir holds, he's not going to put himself into a position where there's no way of knowing. Zakla, kol shezmano kavua, v'omer achi agia, oser achi agia. Omer achi yehe, we saw until it is, that means until it took place, until it was, until Pesach already occurred. So then I'd have to wait until it was finished, oser achi yetze. But if ein zmano kavua, then we do not believe that the person meant, unless he says so beferish, he meant to asr himself for an unspecified amount of time. So if it's ein zmano kavua, it doesn't matter what he says. Because achia hey, remember, doesn't really necessarily mean until it completes. It just means until it will be. So it will be can mean will be to begin, or will be done. But in a case where we're talking about something that there's no way to know when it will be done, doesn't matter if he said ad shiyehe or he said ad shiyagia, it's the same thing. So ben amar ad shiyehe or ben amar ad shiyagia, you know, that's al ad shiyagia. And I'll give you a very good example. A guy says ad hakayetz. Now, until now, we talked about ad hakatzir, ad habatzir, ad hamasik. We didn't talk about another term for a harvest, and that is the kayetz. Now, the kayetz, which gave its name to the entire summer because of this, has to do with figs. And the reason it has to do with figs is because as opposed to other harvests, which are done with chaticha, this is done with kitzitza, which is a reference of pulling on something until it breaks. Namely, in English, picking. But the picking time is only a suitable word to use for figs. And figs are very unique because figs, basically, as the Gemara puts it, every day you come out and there's suddenly a new fig that's ripe for picking that wasn't there yesterday. And this goes on the entire season. So they don't appear all at one time. And that's where you compare Divrei Torah to figs. Every time you go out there, you find new chidushim. But you already learned this perek in the Rambam. So, okay, today there's a new fig to pick. All right. So if that's the case, what happens in Ad HaKayetz? So there, it for sure means the same thing as Ad Shiyehe HaKayetz, because man, I mean, that goes on for quite a while. But what really defines the Kayetz? I mean, is it from the very first time that we find our first fig? Is that already the Kayetz? No. It's where you have sufficient Shiyatchilu Ha'am Lahachmis bekalkalot. So these kalkalot are baskets that you're going around with like this. I mean, if you're only going to find one fig there, you're not going to go out with a basket. So, but once there's enough there that you figure, okay, you're going to have figs that are going to be figured into the basket that you've got. So then you start figuring. So over there, it's going to be, and here that's, because here, see, the kayetz is interesting because it's ambiguous both at the beginning and in the end. So the Gemara wants to define, okay, so what would be the beginning of the Kayetz? But what if you say Beferish until the end of the Kayetz? Achi Avora Kayetz, over there we can't say that you wouldn't have wanted to ask yourself ambiguously. So then what it means is, Achi Akpilo Amaktsuot. Now, most told Maktsuot, what we're talking about over here, is the knives. And Yakpilo is because they used folding knives. So it was a big problem because a lot of Frum people refused to use it because it has the Swiss Army thing on it and had a cross, and they said you're not allowed to use it because of the cross. Anyway, that gives rise to a big machlokas because others learn who would use a Swiss Army knife for the Maktsuot. It must mean mats. So some learn mats. But what were these Maktsuot used for? They were used, oh, by the way, I've been attacked for having a little side package that was a Swiss, you know, that's not Swiss Army, that Swiss thing. Oh my God. I walked into shul once with it. Whew. Be careful, boys. Anyway, so they didn't use this for cutting the figs because as you've got one too? Show that again. Show and tell. Oh my gosh. Anyway, so the idea over here is that they would use this not for the figs, which are picked by hand, as we already saw, and that's why it's called kayetz, but rather they would use it for making, and this is very interesting, because we call these little fig cakes, we call them kitsiot, also because of the maktsuot. So these were standardized fig cakes that needed to be marketed, you know, with the made in Turkey thing on it, even though they're being made in Israel. So you use these maktsuot to make them the correct shape, but they're not used for cutting the actual figs off of the tree. So over there, the achiakpilo, as I said, others from the maktsuot are the mats that you spread the figs out in order to dry. But this is the Ron's pshat over here and many of the other rishayim. Okay, so what we're talking about the kalkala, we're talking about, listen, lots of people will get confused by using the word kalkala because when you go to pick grapes, you're not picking grapes, you're cutting grapes, but you also put them in kalkalot. So which one do you mean? So the Tanakhama says the kalkalot are only kalkalot of Teinim, not a kalkala of Anavim. Tanya. So as opposed to the advertisements that you'll find in a secular press about Perot HaKayetz, anyone who really speaks Lashon HaKodesh obviously understands that Kayetz is by definition figs, not summertime and camp time. And therefore it would only be usher in figs, but not usher in grapes. Whereas Reb Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, no, it's the same thing with the grapes. You know, the grapes come in a little bit later than the figs. My time at the Tanakhama. So why does the Tanakhama say it's only figs? Because he says kayetz means hand-picked. Hand-picked is only true about te'enim. Masha'inkein anavim are not picked by hand. They have to be cut. And therefore, you're not going to use kayetz, which is pick. You would use chaticha. So it doesn't apply to the grapes. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, I can tell you why I think it does apply to grapes also. Because once the grapes have gotten dried out, you can pull a cluster off by hand. And then it's much easier to do that. So because of that, anavim nami kimiradadan, once they become dried out, you left them on the vine, then mikatsam biyada. You can also pick them. So they're hand-picked grapes. Okay, now, we said Achi Avar HaKayetz means Achi Kaflu HaMaktsuot, and that is the end. But there's other implications of Yakpilu HaMaktsuot, because the Braita says, first of all, what do we mean? Do we mean yours, when you are finished? No. We mean Achi Yakpilu Rov HaMaktsuot. We mean, even if you finished, I mean, still, you can't define the netter by when you finish. It means that people in your area have put it away. Once that happens, it says in the Braita, that then they become hefker. So if hukpulo rov hamaktsuot, mutarot mishum gezel, and so you can go in into anybody's area, eat any of the leftover figs, and they're potter from Iser, because, of course, somebody who's mafker, that was the big shaila we had about if somebody was playing games to be mafker his entire kerem or something, but over here they really are hefker. Once they're hefker, so then they're potter and trumas and maisers. Rebbe and Rebbe Yosef and Rebbe Yehuda once came to a place, Iklulu Atra, Bizman Shuhukpulu Rova Maktsuot. So they got to this place where most of these Swiss folding knives had been folded up. And Rebbe, based on his own Mishnah, he goes in and he starts eating. Rebbe Yosef, but Rebbe Yehuda didn't eat. So comes along the owner of the field and he says, how come you guys aren't eating? I mean, after all, so what's your basis for not eating the figs? Even so, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda refused to eat because he felt that the guy was being sarcastic and that he was saying, well, after all, the rabbis have decided that I don't care about people stealing my figs, so why don't you all go steal my figs, you jerks? So that's what he was basically saying. So he wasn't going to rely on that. So it's Mishum Sanyut Miltu de Kalamar Hadin Gavra. This guy was just being disgusting. And he really was not happy about the fact that anybody was eating his figs. And because of that, he wasn't going to rely on it. And Reb Chama bar Reb Chanina also came to a place where it's Mishman Shuk Pulurova Mksuot, and he's eating. And he gave some to the Bocher that was being Meshameshim, who refused to eat it. Of course, they're always more machber than the Rebbe is. So Amar Leiz, Reb Chama bar Chanina said to the Shamish, you can eat, don't worry. Kach Amar Leiz, Rebbe Shmo, Rebbe Yosi, Mishum Oviv, Huk Pelo Rov, HaMakzot, Mutter, Mishum Gezel, Turais, Men HaMaiser, no point in being machber, everything is fine. Rebbe Tarfon was once caught by somebody eating in his field. Here's Rebbe Tarfon eating his figs. That does it, says the guy. He takes this giant garbage bag, throws Rebbe Tarfon into the package, puts him over his shoulder, and says, you know what we do with kittens we don't need around. To the river you go. So Achle Besaka Veshakle, Vamtaye Lemishde Benara. And he's about to throw him into the water. So Rebbe Tarfon says, Oi, Lala Tarfon, Shesel Horgo. But you didn't want to say, listen, it's Rebbe Tarfon. You don't want to kill Rebbe Tarfon. So he just said, poor Tarfon is about to be drowned by this guy. So the guy hears that it's Rebbe Tarfon. He drops him and runs. Oh, God. So Shavki Varek, the guy runs away. And because of that, says Rebbe Avo, Mishum Rebbe Chananya Ben Gamliel, you should know that for the rest of his life, Rebbe Tarfon could never forgive himself. Because Koyamav Shel Oto Tzadik, Haya Mitzta'er Al Davar Zeh. And he would say, Oy Li Shenishtamashti B'Kitra Shel Torah, I took advantage of the Keser HaTorah, that I saved myself using the Keser HaTorah. I'm so embarrassed. Terrible thing. And Rabba Bar Bachanam Rebbe Yochanan, Kolam Ishtamish B'Kitra Shel Torah Ne'akar Min Olam. I mean, take a look at Belshazzar. Belshazzar went ahead and he used the Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. But at that point, they already had no Kedusha to them. They didn't? No. I'll prove to you. That's a pasuk. It says, Shenema uvova pritzim vechileluah. These pritzim that broke into the Beis HaMikdash, they were mechalel everything that they took. Sounds familiar. Kivin sheparatzum nasu chol. That's why I wanted to get up to here, even though I said I was a bad boy yesterday, but I thought it was so again, the Hanukkah and the Inyanim, I couldn't resist. Anyway, so once they were pirates into the Beis HaMikdash, we're talking about pirates and the Yud Gimel Pirtzes and all of the Inyanim of the, which is Nogea even. Why were they Hidliku Neras Bechatzros Kachecha? Why weren't they Matlik the Neras inside of the Heichal? So if they were pirates even in the Heichal, as some say, so then they were Mechal of the Heichal. So now we would have to rebuild it. So therefore there was no point in lighting in the Heichal. So we're saying Mechon the Rambam and we light the Neras outside. Bechatzros Kachecha. A lot of discussion about this issue. Remember the Rambam Paskins that if you take the menorah outside, that even a czar would be able to write the menorah. Anyway, so getting on. So getting back to the point that I was making, so that means that they were already chol, right? And what happened to Belshazzar? Because he used what were once kelim of Kadesh. What happened to him? He was Nekar min Olam, Dichtiv Bei Belailia, Ketil Bar Shetzar Malka. That was the end of Bar Shetzar, and he was murdered. Anyways, getting back to Rabbi Tarfon, HaMishtamish B'Kitra Shel Torah, Kitra Shel Torah can never be Chol, Shuchai V'Kayam La'Olam. How's it going to lose its Kedusha? Al Achas Kama V'Kama, so he couldn't forgive himself. How did I use Kitra Shel Torah? That was the problem. Well, I must say I'm very tempted, but okay, gosh. Yeah, but he knew that he knew that the person would recognize him as a great Talmud Chacham. That's bad enough. You're going to force me to read the next pieces.
We should read up to Tanya, Rebbe. We should finish the
But I want everybody to be sitting on the edge of their chair. Well, what can I do? You've persuaded me. You see the derech of the Yetzer. That's all it takes, another little bit. Okay. Fine. So we'll continue. Says the Gemara, but what was the problem with Rabbi Tarfon? I mean, what he was doing was completely mutter. And why did this guy get so angry? So Rabbi Tarfon, given to Chiyochel, huk pulurov amakzuot avim, and the guy's going to throw him into the river. Amai tsiareyohu gavra. No, you have to know the context of the story. The context of the story is like this. This guy had a group of people stealing from him all year round. And he kept coming back, and someone had collected all of his figs from the day. The guy was fuming. Anyway, he tried everything, tried trapping them, had cameras planted, nothing. Couldn't catch these guys. Now, finally, he catches this fat guy, and he says, aha, here is where all of my figs disappeared to. So Savra Heiner the Ganvan, he was convinced that Rabbi Tarfon, he was the one that was making these Genevis the entire year. So he was going to get rid of him once and for all. Wait a minute. So then why is Alon just asked? So, I mean, then he was in serious danger. So why exactly is Rabbi Tarfon so upset? I mean, he had a right to save his life, didn't he? So, Yehachi, Amai Tzayar Nafshe, you do have a right. See, if the Taina had been that the guy was overreacting, so then Rabbi Tarfon has an understandable reason to be upset, because all he needed to do was explain to the guy that, listen, me Ikra din it's mutter. And if the guy didn't want to listen, he said, could have said, okay, fine, I'm happy to pay you if you're Makbedon, if Chas v'Shalom, I don't want to do it, I'll pay you for the figs. But if this guy was outraged that he had been stealing figs the whole year, and he's got $100,000 worth of figs that have disappeared into Tarfon, so now you understand why it is that he's really going to drown him. He's not just scaring him. And what am I supposed to do? Says the Gemara, well, what do you mean? What are you supposed to do? Rabbi Tarfon was a multimillionaire. So he could just as easily have said to the guy, listen, I'll pay you for the entire year's crop, you know? I mean, it's not as if it's a big problem for him to spend a couple $100,000 to pay the guy back for his whole thing. But he had to use the Kitzra Shel Torah when all he needed to do was pay. So answers the Gemara, indeed. Mishum de Rabbi Tarfon, Asher Gadol Havi. He was very rich, and he could have been Mephias and Bedamim. He said, listen, don't drown me, and I'll pay you for the whole thing.